Good morning. It is Tuesday. This is a morning shift on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. We are live here in the Kia Studios. Bo, hanging out with you on a somewhat rainy kind of day.
Yeah, I'm so mad at myself because I should have probably done some yard work yesterday that I needed to do, and I didn't. And I was like, I'll just do it tomorrow. And now that it's raining, I'm like, not good planning on my part, man. I definitely dropped the ball on that end. So you're right. It's a little bit ugly outside. I bet it wasn't, from your pictures, it wasn't ugly in Miami.
It was not. We actually had great winter weather for Miami. I think the high was like 80, 79 to 80.
That's like my perfect climate.
And I got the complimentary upgrade at the hotel.
That's always
good. Wraparound balcony, private view of the beach. Mm. The girl said, I'm going to do this, but please don't tell anybody. I said, sure.
As you tell.
Secret's safe with me.
A couple million people.
Look, no one's going to know. No one's going to know.
Don't tell Tiff a secret. It'll be, she'll just wait. I waited like 3 days and then I told the world.
Give us her name too, Tiff.
Florida, you know?
Yeah. So, you got a picture of this lady?
I got
her employee number.
You stop it.
Wraparound balcony. That's nice.
Yeah.
Room service or no?
I didn't use it. I DoorDash. There wasn't a lot of great options.
What?
There wasn't that great.
You DoorDash.
There was not
service?
Good options. At
yeah, I mean, like,
place.
There's. It sounds like a nice hotel that
it
probably
was,
had decent
but
stuff.
The room because it's so massive. When you're at a resort and it's so massive, sometimes the selection is limited because there's so many people. So it's either Anyway, that's minutia. But no, I DoorDash some stuff and opened the sliding glass windows and got to kind of sleep and wake up to the sound of waves.
And did you sleep back with it open?
I did not. I wanted to.
You thought about brave. It.
I was high up. It wasn't like I was like on the ground.
No, I mean brave in terms of like you're there. Like you can sometimes get raspy. Sometimes your kind of voice goes out when the weather gets to you.
It's
you know
beach
what I mean?
Weather. Revives you.
Trust me. I grew up in Florida. It's I get what you're saying. Sometimes you wake up when that weather is, the temperature fluctuates. Sometimes it can lead to a little sore throat in the morning.
No, I didn't sleep with it like that. Just, open it up, watch the sunrise. Good times. Take me back. But I'm glad to be back on a rainy day.
Sounds like it.
With
sounds
you
like
guys.
It. Yeah.
I don't even know.
Sorry
it's
to
like
bring
60.
You down.
It's like 60 or something like that.
Yeah.
So.
It was weird when we got back from Denver. Sunday night. It was starting to get cold in Denver as we walked on the tarmac, and then when we got back, I was like, man, it feels good out here because it was like I don't even think it was 60, but it was right. It was so cool, it was like 55, 60 degrees. And as we were walking down the stairs off the plane, I was like, it feels so good.
Yeah,
even though
sounds
it,
awesome.
when we landed in Denver, I was like, and it was crisp. I was like, feels so good.
Right.
Because you got a little bit of that crisp air, and I've been following because the tournament is in how many hours, Mike? Not 25.
Not 25.
In like
whatever
6 days.
Whatever you said yesterday.
And it's going to, knock on wood, Dylan, right now the forecast is like partly cloudy and 65 degrees. And I'm like,
that's a perfect golf day.
Yeah, because
partly cloudy.
Because I'm gonna have to have my Squid Nation hoodie on.
No, you're not.
We're doing the show because it's gonna be chilly.
No, you're not.
But by the time we tee off, it's gonna be depending on what your preference is, hoodie and shorts or short sleeve and pants, right? And I mean, I'm a hoodie and shorts kind of guy. That's how I live my life. So that's perfect golf weather.
That's how I live my life. It's a hoodie and shorts kind of guy.
Yeah, hoodie and shorts and a pint of beer at a time, That's all of my life.
Stop it.
What?
You don't even drink beer.
Yeah, dude.
No, you don't.
I drink the Al Inn Lager.
Yeah.
And sure. I drink it. My beer drinking days are less than they were before because I like to do some vodka, maybe a little transfusion here or there.
Yeah, sure.
However... Yeah. When you roll up to NASCAR, Mike, when you roll up to these events, you roll up on a tailgate, beer is the way to go. It's a lot easier.
There's no doubt.
This hour brought to you by Morgan & Morgan Injured. Hire Morgan & Morgan, America's largest injury law firm. All right, we'll get you to the Falcons soon enough, but the Atlanta Hawks survive their game against the Sacramento Kings, 109-108. They did blow a 16-point lead, but they came back to win this thing. And it was a night in which you saw Trae Young dish it out. He had just 7 points, but but 19 assists. So he was distributing the ball quite well in this one.
Yeah, and this is a team that continues to get healthier and healthier little by little. You saw Bogey, Kobe last night. And look, man, Dyson Daniels, I mentioned this to Bo before the show. I'm a big Vic Krejci fan, but Dyson Daniels might be the jersey I'd have to select if I was getting one right now, man. He's just playing at such a high level defensively, doing all the things. He's doing so many things, Dyson Daniels is, that you have begged for the Atlanta Hawks to do for years. And Dyson Daniels has been that guy. And I'm not saying that, you know, he's the sole reason they were able to win. But, man, he's been a catalyst for change.
Well, he made
for this
the
franchise.
Game-saving play. So yeah. He stripped De'Aaron Fox's attempt at a game winner. So,
yeah.
First kudos off, don't be flim-flamming. You got to pick a guy and go with it. You can't be,
look, man.
You know, no. You can't be be just flipping on guys because that's what
it sounds like.
You know what? I'm glad you did that wham thing, because that's essentially what the mafia is, a bunch of flim flammers. But here's what I'll tell you.
Second player in 2 years.
That's flim flamming. Okay. Here's what I will tell you. For an organization, and Dylan and Day Day is Atlanta guys, I need y'all to tell me if you think I'm right or wrong on this.
Sounded like a shot.
But, well, I mean, you just bragged about growing up at the beach and how you know about the wind, and you just took a shot at me, so I'm going to take a shot at you. Hey, the reality is that for an organization that has a tradition of losing trades, it feels like we have won this trade currently. I know it's a short time, but it doesn't feel one like we're going to lose. I mean, let's be honest. The national narrative is you lost a trade. Whether I believe that or not, that's the national narrative. You absolutely lost the DeJounte Murray trade. We all know
the first one.
Yes, when you traded for him.
Yeah, yeah.
We all know that the Dominique Wilkins trade will go down as probably the worst trade in NBA history, if not top five, when you got Danny Manning. But there's others that you can mix in there. But this is a team that doesn't do well when they trade and they make these big trades. And right now, it looks like you're on the positive end because Dyson Daniels is not what you thought you were getting. It is much, much more.
Yeah. And look, I think that it starts there, and I think, what was the number? I just looked at it a second ago. 12 consecutive games with a steal. Come on, man. Come on. Not only that, what did Trey have, 8 last night, 7 or 8
7 points?
19
assists.
19 assists, right? And I'm not saying that's the path forward. It's got to be different, you know, depending on the matchups and everything else, but when Trey's in a given mood and you actually have a defender like Dyson Daniels playing next to him, this team, man, like, they're a good squad, and I think that brings consistency to this team.
Well,
because
we
talked about the Kings, and you talked about the West Coast trip and the second of a back-to-back. It's just we don't see the Hawks, it feels like, put that kind of effort forth in some of these games like that.
And I want to add on to this, too, just real quick. Sorry, Tiff. I want to add on this,
that's
too.
That's all right.
Dyson Daniels is only 21 years old. So if he continues to play the way that he has and his projection and his uptick and potential keep the trajectory that it has now – you have your backcourt for hopefully maybe the next, you know, 8 years, maybe even a decade. Like, so when you talk about winning a trade, yes, you missed out on the DeJounte Murray trade, but trading away DeJounte Murray, I think you, as of right now, as it stands right now, it looks like you got the absolute most back, plus maybe even a little bit more for what you ended up giving up. So Dyson Daniels looking really, really good right now.
Mm.
What I was going to go back to was just Trae Young. When you were talking about him distributing the ball with the 19 assists, I thought it was great. You got your team leader recognizing, as he said it, that he said he knows his shot's going to come back, but he didn't want to force anything tonight. So he wanted to make sure that he got everybody involved. So I thought that was
beautiful.
Really key.
Yeah, I'm glad that you used that quote, because that's one I wanted to touch on too, is the fact that 5 of his points came from the free throw line. And when he's 1 from 7 to the field, It's really important for a guy like Trae Young to be able to trust his teammates and know that they're going to pick him up. You know, you get DeAndre Hunter coming off the bench in only 25 minutes, dropping 24. I don't know what DeAndre Hunter's future is with this team or the league, but if he can understand that this is what he is now, and he can come off and give you 24 points, and he's not going to give you that every night, but he can give you valuable minutes and score points. You know, the fact that Zachary Richesse is has taken his spot, but also the fact that they basically split time last night and they're on the floor at the same time, you know, the same time. But when you get 26 minutes from one and 25 from the other, and you're getting what? You get 42 points combined.
Dude.
And Reece Shea is a stat line just filler, dude. I mean, guy, there's no stat line that goes with a zero in it for him. Yeah. And the fact that he has another two steals, a block, you know, he's a thief is what he is.
Yeah,
he's an absolute thief on the court.
I will say this too: watching this game last night, in years past, I would probably felt a certain way about Kevin Huerter being on the opposing team, and you know what comes along with that. Yeah, I wasn't worried about it last night because Reece Shea, to your point, is playing at or above expectations so far, and Dyson Daniels is doing the same thing. When you add that to Trey that's dishing it out, DeAndre Hunter playing well, and everything else that comes along with that, I know it's a one-point win, but, man, it felt for whatever reason, much more massive than that, considering everything that's happened recently.
When we come back here on the morning shift, a much-needed bye for the Atlanta Falcons, but what are their plans? Does it perhaps mean looking in the mirror? We'll hear from quarterback Kirk Cousins next on the morning shift on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
Second and six. Rush. Ball knocked out of his hand and ends up in the arms of Guyton. He gets it knocked out by Petrie and the return for the touchdown by Derek Barnett.
Joe Buck, Troy Aikman on the call of Monday Night Football on ESPN. And that was Derek Barnett with a capping off a crazy play. There with fumble after fumble, he gets the scoop and score, and that helps the Houston Texans have a dominant win over the Cowboys 34-10. It seems like the sky is falling in Arlington, literally with the metal falling from the roof of Jerry World prior to the start of the game. If you didn't see that, they had to secure another piece that was about to fall onto the field. So things are not going well there at the Star in Dallas for the Cowboys. But the Texans absolutely needed that win to kind of redirect the course of their season.
Yeah, I see what you did there. How about this note? The Cowboys have trailed by at least 20 points in each of their past six home games. That is...
if you want to play them, you want to play them at home. That's
brutal. That's absolutely brutal. That's an NFL record. So, yeah, I mean, I thought that at times this game was going to be closer. I think there was an explosive at the end of the first quarter, early second quarter, that made this a 14-7 game. And it just seemed like it was tight almost going into halftime. In the second half, Dallas just they lacked any kind of counterpunches. And the images of Dak sitting up in the box, man, watching his Surface tablet, man, just it's not good right now. And this is one of those weird deals where so many times people say that Jerry Jones overreacts midseason or whatever it may be to different things. Now, obviously, he's come out and said he's not firing Mike McCarthy and he's going to make it end of the year and all that. But, man, that team is deficient in a lot of different ways.
Yeah, they're deficient, but the reality is Mike McCarthy's went 12-5, two straight seasons? And they're extremely banged up. They've lost so many guys on defense, you know, some key players. They've lost their starting quarterback. I don't know what you think you're getting if you it's not the same situation to me as New Orleans, where it felt like a mutiny. Even at some point, I think there was some player groundswell, and I'm not sure that's the case in Dallas. And you've lost so many key players, and you've got a good coach. And, you know, I don't think it's the same thing. And I'm not sure firing Mike McCarthy does anything to help this team move forward. In fact, I think it makes it probably worse.
I don't know, man. I just feel like and you mentioned 12-5 years, and then I see what Kellen Moore's doing in Philly right now as the offense coordinator. It just feels like this offense has been stagnant. And you mentioned Dak's out, dude. They weren't good before Dak left. I mean, obviously, we saw that here firsthand a couple of weeks ago in Atlanta. So
I disagree with you. I'm going to push back. I think Kellen Moore is doing a good job, but he's also got healthy A.J. Brown now. He's got Devonta Smith.
Those guys have missed games this year.
They have missed, but they're both healthy, if I'm not mistaken, right now. They've got, is it Goddard at tight end? Phenomenal player. Saquon Barkley is kind of the thing that is setting that offense on fire right now. And Jalen Hurts seems healthy. And Jalen Hurts is getting back to being Jalen Hurts. I don't think that's the same. And I don't think at any point in time he ever had that many weapons offensively as he does now in Philly. I mean, yeah, he had Dak and he had CeeDee Lamb, but I don't believe he had to the same extent weapon-wise. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe somebody like, you know, Tony Pollard was a running back at that point in Dallas, and I think
Ferguson's pretty good. I mean,
yeah, but Tony Pollard's never been Saquon Barkley.
I agree with everything you're saying. The problem therein lies is that in Philly you've got one of the best offense lines in the NFL, and in Dallas you used to have one of the best offense lines in the NFL, and you no longer do. And the thing is, I would agree with you, but the bottom line is they got rid of Kellen Moore. So why, if he's not the issue, then why are we getting rid of him, right?
They got rid of Kellen Moore, and the next year they went 12-5, and they had a great offense.
My point is that if Mike McCarthy is this guy, and we're pointing to the 12-5 years, then he's got to be included in that conversation.
But they fired Kellen Moore, and they got better.
They were 12-5 when they fired him.
Yeah, and they got better offensively when they fired him, and he went out there, and he didn't do anything in L.A. He didn't do anything. We forget that he went out to L.A. and was brutally bad with the Chargers. Their offense their offense was not good. And then he goes to Philly and he inherits a King's gold chest. And yeah, he's doing fine with it. But it's not like they've set the world on fire, you know, in other places he's been. I understand your point, but I think it's easy to blame Mike McCarthy. He's been crapped on since the day he got there, and he only went 24-9 in some of those years.
You can't be down by 20 in 6 straight home games and not get crapped on as a head coach, especially the Dallas Cowboys. I'm not going to sit here and feel sorry for Mike McCarthy.
I don't feel sorry for him, but we've killed the guy when he was doing well, and now it's easy to say, well, fire him now, because he's essentially been a lame-duck coach since the day he stepped in there.
It's ugly.
Where do you get these expressions from?
What?
A king's gold chest. Sorry.
You ever seen a king's, what do you call it, treasure?
Anyway, the sky is not falling here in Atlanta, despite an ugly Falcons loss 38-6 to the Denver Broncos on Sunday. And the quarterback, Kirk Cousins, he spoke with Dave Archer, the former Falcons QB and Falcons Radio Network analyst, about what the team needs to do during this bye week.
Well, we have to have some conversations to talk about how we can be better. And, you know, those are conversations. The conversations are one thing, but actually resolving it and getting answers is the other thing. And so that's what we've got to do. And I think that's probably priority number one on the bye week.
So I'm standing there, obviously, when this interview happens, because it was with Art, and I'm Arch, and I'm like, wait, what? And I knew that immediately I wanted to have this conversation, Mike, because you've been in these rooms where – and I would imagine the way I see this, and a lot of this has got a fan view, and when I hear this and look at this and think about it, is, oh, they're all sitting around watching film, and then somebody's like, well, what the hell were you doing there? Why'd you move? Or what happened here? Why'd you hold on there, Matt? And at the end of that run, And I don't think there's infighting. I don't think that's what it is, but I think I'm a guy that doesn't love confrontation, but I also think that it's a necessary part of life.
Healthy. It's healthy for a football team
sometimes.
It's necessary.
It's necessary for in all. I think it's not just a football team. I think in life in general,
confrontation in a football locker room and in meeting rooms. And confrontation is probably the wrong word. I don't want to use confrontation. But sometimes when you have to have these tough conversations, it builds urgency, right? When you know that somebody is not suggesting something but is irritated with you about the way you're doing something, it builds urgency, right? If I suggest, you know, you do something here at work, I'm like, hey, you know, you should do this, and then you don't do it the next time, then all of a sudden I get irritated, and then I'm like, hey, man, I thought I told you I needed you to do this.
Or I thought we talked about it.
Yeah, I thought we talked about this. And you didn't do it. And now all of a sudden it builds in a sense of urgency. And so I think that's probably some of the conversations they're having. Specifically, well, I was going to say specifically on offense, but that's just the way I look at it. It's definitely happening on defense too. Because what you have is, especially when you get injuries, right? You have injuries and you've been telling, hey, I need you to cross train at this corner spot and that corner spot. I need you. We're not going to be able to get it in practice, but afterwards I need you to take reps at safety, right? We're not going to be able to get you the reps live in practice, but afterwards, I need you to be ready to play this spot on defense. I need you to be ready to play nickel, Richie Grant. I need you to do that. All right, you're going to have to take safety reps, but I need you ready to do this. And so, some of those conversations inside the locker room, when you turn on the film, right? And when you watch some of these guys do the same things that have been getting you beat at those positions, Kyle Pitts on the front of a wide zone and, you know, exposing his chest and not getting any movement, getting pushed in the backfield, you have to build that sense of urgency so the guys understand how imperative their job is moving forward for this offense and for this entire team to click. So the conversation, and I'm with you, when I hear Kirk Cousins kind of say some of those things, guys, you can hear it in his voice. He's like, I saw some things today that we've talked about and that aren't happening. And it starts with him, man. He looked uncomfortable at times in the pocket. He's got to move with more fluidity in the backfield if they're going to be able to get some things accomplished on offense. And you can hear that. You can hear that sense of urgency in the way he talks.
Also, the bye week going to be huge for that. But in healing up, there were some key injuries. He had a list of guys that were out going into the game and then players that were injured during the game. You had Darnell Mooney, your receiver, with a hamstring. Zach Harrison with a knee. Kevin King, your corner, with a concussion. KC Washington, also a concussion. And then Nate Landman with a hamstring injury.
Yeah, Landman's got it. He's That's, all over the place. He had the shoulder that he felt like he was grabbing onto multiple times. I know Wes and Arch mentioned it on the broadcast. Of all the things we just talked about, Darnell Mooney is the one that really, really is terrifying for me because I just think that Darnell Mooney – now, I think you could make the conversation about Troy Landman, but Nate Landman, but Troy Anderson is one of those guys that you feel like eventually is going to come back and hopefully get healthy. But Darnell Mooney does things that I don't think anybody else on our offense does. And he opens things up that I don't think that can be, you know, can happen with a Kadarius Hodge.
Well, defensively, you know, you go in there without D. Alford, Mike Hughes, your two of your top three corners because of the way they play. You go into that game without those guys. And I think James Smith-Williams and TQ Graham have both done good jobs as well. Up front at times, but then you look, do you want to talk offense? The fact that you couldn't run the ball, now they're a good run defense, but you couldn't run the ball at all, and Charlie Warner's not available. Yeah, that might prove that he helps out in the run game. I'm not saying it's the only reason, don't get me wrong.
No, I agree.
But
no,
I think when you don't have a pivotal guy like that in the run game, he's essentially your H-back, your fullback, whatever the hell you want to call
it. Your lead blocker. He is your lead blocker.
Yeah, and when you don't have him, and then no coincidence, you can't run the ball. Now you got to a point in the game where you weren't going to even be able to try to run the ball because you were behind so bad, so much, you know, that also leads into it. But this team was plagued from every part of the team was injured. And then the Darnell thing is he was slowed coming in the game.
And again, when we had this conversation yesterday, Tiff, I want to hammer home again the fact that this team should have never been beat the way they were on Sunday. And I think that bears mentioning because this is not an excuse talking about the injuries. What I'm talking about with the injuries is what it looks like moving forward, because what happened on Sunday should never happen. It should never happen. We've seen teams come in here shorthanded and put up a good fight a number of times, and yet the Falcons just get their doors blown off and Bo Nix goes 28 of 33.
This hour brought to you by Morgan & Morgan Injured. Hire Morgan & Morgan, America's largest injury law firm. When we come back, the college football playoff rankings drop tonight. But we'll give you one insider's predictions on who's in, who's out next when we come back on the morning shift on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Mike and Bo already trying to predict the future with the college football playoff rankings.
Those That's what we do.
Drop tonight. And a lot is up for debate, but let's take a look at Heather Dinich from ESPN, their college football insider. She's got her top 25 college football playoff predictions before the actual rankings come out tonight. I'll just give you the top 10 here. She's got Oregon at 1, Ohio State at 2, Texas 3, Penn State 4, Indiana 5, Notre Dame 6, Miami at 7, Alabama at 8, Ole Miss at 9, Georgia at 10, I will do the top 12, and Tennessee at 11, and Boise at 12.
It's so weird to look at rankings because in the end, rankings, like we've said all along, rankings don't equal seedings, right? I mean, that's just the nature of the beast, and you look at what she's got, and she's got four Big Ten teams inside the top five. It can't end like that, you know what I mean? So you're going to obviously get the conference champions at 1 through 4, and all those Big Ten teams start to slide back, which means the two-loss SEC teams start to slide back. And there's just a lot of things left out there to be talked about, man. And I talked about it yesterday, and I think that Georgia fans, Tennessee fans, Ole Miss fans all paying attention to it as well. Does whoever loses the SEC championship game get left out of the college football playoff? And I think that's going to be tough to swallow either way, that you played an extra game and got left out, or if you make it in with three losses, no matter who that team is, there's going to be somebody upset that didn't play there that has two losses and is somehow getting left out as well. So it's it's all going to be about how that game rolls.
I think if you have two teams in the SEC championship game at two losses, I believe that they're both in. I don't believe that they're going to leave either one of those teams out, because the incentive is still to make the conference championship game. They want to find a way to preserve that, because they don't want to give you a reason to say, well, what's the point of even going to that?
Right. Yeah.
You know, with 12 teams, it's no longer the outlier. Well, that's an elimination game. And yeah. And I'm going to tell you something. They're never going to – I believe that the committee would be hard-pressed to ever leave one of those teams out, because the hidden thing is this money. And it's revenue not only the network that's controlling the playoff, but the ADs that are controlling the playoff and these schools and college football, and they know where the money line is. You want to talk about teams being left out? What if there's a realistic situation the Big 12 champion could be left out? There's a realistic situation, because if Army beats Notre Dame this weekend and then finishes the season undefeated and wins the AAC, they could shoot up. If let's just say whoever the eventual Big 12 champion is loses another game before the title game, or loses, you know, maybe BYU loses again and they still make the title game, Colorado's in there. I think Colorado, if they make it, is A, going to be a little dangerous, and B, would get voted in.
I agree.
But the reason I bring that up is because it's the top five conference champions that are ranked the highest by the selection committee. And depending on what happens, those teams might not be, you know, there might be another conference champion ahead of them.
Yeah.
Right?
It's crazy to think about. And you and I had this conversation, 3 weeks ago, and I was like, I don't know, man, the Big 12 champ might end up at 12. I was trying to make that argument, and now, you know, here we are 3 weeks later.
That's extremely realistic.
Oh, I know. Well, to my point, I said it 3 weeks ago, and you didn't want to believe me.
Well, because at the time, BYU and Iowa State were undefeated.
Here's what else I'll say about the two-loss SEC teams that we're talking about. I don't think it's even possibly realistic that all four, Ole Miss, Tennessee, Georgia and Alabama, all finish with their record still at two losses. One of those teams is going to take an L. I'm not so sure it won't be Alabama.
Ole Miss could lose this weekend.
Ole Miss could lose this weekend. Tennessee could lose against Vanderbilt. I mean, there's just those teams. And look, Georgia Tech, when they're playing well, is going to have a puncher's chance. All these rivalry games you can't tell me all four of those teams are going to win their rivalry games at the end of the year. Auburn against Alabama, Mississippi State against Ole Miss, Georgia, you know what I mean? Like, that's just not how it rolls in the SEC. So I know that the committee is sitting there, and they're probably talking about it, going, please, Jesus, let one of these teams lose the next couple of weeks so that we don't have egg on our face the same way you did last year, by the way. Ding.
Since you guys mentioned the Big 12 being left out before, Heather Dinich also has her first-round byes, and she has Oregon as the Big 10 champ, Texas as the SEC champ, Miami as the ACC champ, and she has Boise as the Mountain West champion.
Yeah. And she still has BYU in there, this Big 12 champ. I'm with Bo, though.
Those are the first round games. So those were the byes then. Right. But yes, BYU's in the first round.
Well, I think the big takeaway is just to point out that you said the first round by Boise being that number four seed, which everybody would have had slotted before the year as the Big 12 champ. And then, like, to Bo's point, if you slot in an Army, if they possibly beat Notre Dame, that kind of shakes things up in a big, big way. And remember, that Army-Navy game is after what would be the college football playoff selection committee setting up the playoffs.
And can you, because you like, we might have talked about this yesterday, or that was just an imaginary conversation that I had, but could you imagine, you know, Notre Dame to me being in there is a little bit fraudulent. They have the worst loss in the country, and they have a win, good win, I would say, at home against Texas A&M, but it's not the same. I think the A&M team has gotten much better. But if Army beats Notre Dame and goes undefeated and wins their conference, Hear me out. How could you slot Notre Dame as being in at six and then tell Army, well, you know, when you might have beat them when they were six in the college football playoff, but you got to go kick rocks even though you went undefeated in your conference.
Right. No, because, I don't know.
Because I don't, I mean, I'm not trying to crush Notre Dame or knock them or be, you know, any way, shape, or form, but who's Notre Dame played?
Well,
other than Texas A&M.
Yeah, they beat A&M.
That's
propping them up a little bit.
Yeah, but you turned around and lost to a Northern Illinois team who I think they've won like one game, two games all year.
It's one of the craziest losses definitely.
Oh, they're 6-4 now, so it's not as bad.
One of the craziest ones I can remember. I'll say this much too, when we brought up Big 12 champ, Mackenzie Brooks, who works for CBS Sports, she does such a good job. I think she's actually a Georgia grad, if I'm not mistaken. She was kind of going at Danny Cannell about the BYU thing, and I loved it. She's like, she's a Vegas kind of handicapper and follows that, and she was like, I would favor 8 SEC teams against BYU. It just, like, I was like, whoa.
Well, Danny Cannell, and I love Danny because he likes
one of us.
I love him because I know what he's doing, and he's just kind of poking bears because he thinks that gets him interaction. But he tried to post this, oh, this is the great SEC and who they had lost to. And Jacob Hester goes, oh, you can play this game too. And he posted who all they've beat. And I'm going to tell you, you look at some of these SEC teams that have went out. The fact that you have 1, 2, 3, 4 Big Ten teams in the top five, and you look at their schedules, I mean, dude, Florida and Georgia have played more ranked teams than anybody in the Big Ten will play, I think, combined all year. I swear, it's close. It's that close.
Will a different Falcons team emerge coming out of the bye week? We'll hear from quarterback Kirk Cousins on the other side when we come back on the morning shift on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.